New ideas, thought-leading opinions, and the latest ways of working. This is the School Leadership Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the final School Leadership Podcast of 2018, brought to you, as always, by NAHT and NAHT Edge. If you're familiar with the podcast, you'll know that usually we interview a guest from the world of education just to kind of get a feel for their insights and advice on a particular topic. But because this is the last episode of the year, we thought we'd bring you something a little bit different. Earlier on this year, Edge Director James Bowen joined a panel at the inaugural EdTech Podcast Festival in London to discuss the vital issue of teacher workload. In this month's podcast, you'll get to hear that very debate in full. James is joined on the panel by journalist and founder of TeacherTap, Laura McInerney, Ross Morrison McGill, better known, I suspect, by his Twitter handle, Teacher Toolkit, and also Rory McGrath, Deputy Head for the New Wave Federation. It's Rory McGrath who goes first to talk about workload, tech, and expectations.
We found that workload is pretty intense. There's a lot of things that the teachers are required to do. But what we have really found is that the use of our technical devices has allowed a more flexible approach to that workload. So we have incredibly high expectations, so we do expect a lot from them. But actually being able to pick up the device, walk out the door at 4 o'clock, go and do their family duties, and then choose to work at home if they want to, has allowed that expectation to remain high, but ultimately not impact negatively on their family life.
Okay, and is there any particular devices that you...
We're an Apple distinguished school, so we have a one-to-one deployment across our 5 and 6 classes, and we have 1 to 2 in reception to year 4. So that's for the students, and then every teacher has their own teacher iPad and Apple Pencil.
And when did you introduce this?
This is our 5th year with Apple Technologies. We do have Chromebooks as well to support the sort of more traditional approach to using a laptop, but the use of the Apple device as a teacher tool is about 4 years old now. So we had them with the children first and then have rolled it out to the teachers as well.
Okay, thank you very much. Laura, I wonder if you could just tell us a little bit about TeacherTap.
I can, and I can also, I might challenge you or push you back a little bit, Rory, on something that you just said, because, so TeacherTap is this app that we invented about a year ago, and it surveys teachers every single day. We've got about 2,700 teachers on each day, and they just answer 3 questions about their work day. We encourage everybody to be on it because it's a good way of us collecting data that we don't currently have about teachers. We don't know what time they get to work, we don't know where they eat their lunch, we don't know anything about them, and they're leaving the profession at such high rates. Mm-hmm. Unless we can find out more about their daily lives and we can tweak the environment in which they're working, we think we're not going to get any better at keeping those teachers on board. And one of the things we've discovered is this very habit of teachers getting to work incredibly early, because they've got to be there before the morning rush, you can't be late. Yeah. They're then there from 7:30, they work incredibly hard all day. And then they apologise for leaving at 4:30 and they say, "I'm really sorry, I've got to go home and see my children." As if that's not allowed when you've got a job. And then they feel a certain amount of pressure to begin again at night with emails, with PowerPoints, with these devices. And actually I think that is driving in some senses workload that feels flexible, but it's actually quite bad for you, in the same way that, you know, I quite like eating lots of chocolate, but if I did it all of the time, it would in fact be quite bad for me.
So your data, do you have a kind of demographic spread of users across the country, leaders?
Yep.
Primary school teachers?
So all teachers can be on it. Of the 2,700, about 1,600 are secondary and just over 1,000 are primary, so we split quite well between those two, but we would like more primary teachers in there. And we're slightly over on head teachers, which isn't a bad problem to have. We can figure out if the results are coming through a little bit strange, and if you're on the app, mm-hmm. you do get to see the results each day as well, so you can nosy in on what's happening.
Okay,
in
so I've got the app, and I would recommend, if you don't use it, TeacherTap, get it on your phone and it'll ping you a questionnaire every day. What was the question you asked users today, or am I putting you on the spot here?
No. I asked something from here earlier, because I asked someone what question they would most like to ask a teacher, and I had a gap available, and they said that if your head teacher came to you on Monday and they said that you could pick from one of 3 types of resources, any subject, topic of your choice, and you could have a textbook, or you could have editable Word worksheets, or you could have an AI chatbot, what would you choose? And we'll find out by 3:30 tomorrow what they said.
Grab the weight then. So get on the app if you want to see the answers. Thank you, Laura. James, NAHT Insights or NAHT Edge. What's the kind of common things that school leaders are saying to you through your channels?
I think when it comes to workload, I think there's complete recognition across the sector that something needs to be done. I think, you know, all the data's out there, it's clear in terms of recruitment and retention, it's no longer an option. It hasn't been an option for a number of years, but I think most schools I speak to now are saying, we're having to do something about this. The number of teachers who are leaving in the first 5 years of teaching, etc., so the imperative is to do something. I think when it comes down to what's driving the workload, what's causing it, you can kind of look at the kind of macro level, and so much of that I still think is being driven by about the accountability structures we have, and we can talk about how that happens, and I think that's been long in the making. But in terms of if you go to specifics, most teachers will say to me, look, it's still the marking that's massively impacting on my time, it's still all sort of the data entry and the data crunching, and to an extent the planning, although most teachers I speak to actually sort of say, I don't mind the planning bit so much because I'm interested in creating really exciting, engaging lessons going to help the children learn. I think one of the things we've got to be really clear about is teachers don't mind working hard. I've never met a teacher who doesn't mind working really hard. The problem they have is doing tasks that they feel are having no impact at all, when they feel they're wasting their time and doing things for the sake of it.
Can I push you for an example?
I think we got there with some of the data tracking stuff. I think using data to inform teaching and learning is useful. I think if you're doing a data drop every 2 or 3 weeks for every child in your class, and then you're cutting it 70 different ways because you're analysing preschool meal children who had SEN 3 years ago that are boys versus you get to that kind of level. And we just went too far with it. And I was guilty of that as a school leader. So I think that might be an example where less is more. Let's just be a bit more simple here.
Okay. Thank you. And particularly for head teachers, I'm going to go back to that point. What is their workload issue?
I think so much of it for head teachers, it still feels like it's driven by inspection and accountability. And although I think there are signs that things are moving in the right direction, I think there's signs that Ofsted have understood and DfE have understood, so much of a head teacher's work is still about preparing things just in case. I better have a file or multiple files on my desk in case the inspector comes in and asks for something that I otherwise won't have. Or I better have all those spreadsheets ready just in case. And it's interesting because Ofsted will say, well, we don't want that anymore. But this is something that's been decades in the making. This is something that's been going on an awful long time. And when I say to head teachers, you don't really need a lot of that stuff anymore, they'll say, yeah, I'm not sure I trust that. I think I need to go through at least 2 inspections before I'm willing to sort of put that, because the stakes are so high. The risk of not having that piece of information, not having that piece of evidence and things going wrong, it's just a risk that's not worth taking for them. So I think it's still about the having stuff ready, the evidencing, the preparation, the audit trail side of things.
Okay, and the NAHT published the accountability report last Friday. Can I get their workload highlights from the recommendations? So there were 9.
Yeah, I mean, again, the workload, we didn't sort of specifically say too much about, stop doing this, start doing this. It came back to the broader culture. It came back to actually if schools are working in fear of the system, and if they feel they have to gather all this evidence just in case, that's going to drive workload. So we didn't really talk too much specifically about individual things to stop and start doing. It was much more around sort of the bigger picture and the way that the accountability system is putting such pressure on schools. 1 year's set of dodgy data and you start worrying for your job. And now that's not workload, but that is incredibly stressful, and actually, the stress is as much of the problem. So, if you're not sleeping at night because you're constantly panicking about, will I have a job next year with this set of results? And that's not an exaggeration. We've seen some stories on Twitter recently about people talking about that kind of stuff. And I think that kind of level of stress is as much of a problem as the workload.
Okay, thank you. And so, Rory, how do you manage teacher well-being in your school when you might notice the signs of staff feeling under pressure?
That's a good question. So we've got a lucky position that we have a wealth of teachers from all stages of their careers. So we have Teach First all the way through to, you know, 10 plus years of experience. So we've set up a coaching system that each experienced member of staff is able to identify and work with a developing teacher. Sometimes it's around subject knowledge, sometimes it's around pedagogy, sometimes it is around well-being. But the idea is there that you've got that personal relationship within the school so that if things are getting on top of you, even if it's not explicitly in the remit of the beginning of the project, you actually are able to offload and share and ask for advice. So we find that in addition to, you know, the more traditional mentoring for your NQTs, has helped build a culture where the teachers want to be open and discuss things with each other.
So for any people in the audience that work in schools, what's the methodology? How have you set this up?
It came from discussing actually with our Teach First partners. We were quite a big school in terms of the recruitment that we do from them, and they were piloting projects and schemes around mentorship and those sorts of things. So we took it upon ourselves. The borough that we work in as well have offered us a free trial of in-school CAMS workers, so that was something that we were able to take advantage of in building in that capacity that lots of other schools are not able to build in, but we've taken advantage of it and really ensured that well-being is taught explicitly to the children, but also it's the staff around them are
okay,
explicitly.
And could you maybe sum up a bit of feedback from one of your colleagues, a highlight?
I'll give it from a leadership point of view. It's our retention. So our retention in school has been more successful over the past couple of years of this sort of approach than it was any time before
fantastic.
That. So we have, you know, we're inner London. There's three schools within, you know, half a mile of us. Teachers can move on as quickly as they want to. But what we're finding is now that they see that they are valued and they see that their professional development is valued and that they want to stay with us to continue that journey.
Right, fantastic. It's lovely to hear. Laura, Teacher Tap, mental health, wellbeing. What kind of insights could you share with us?
Sure.
Things
so
that you've asked.
We did some work earlier in the year, so our sample was a little bit smaller, but we found even as we've grown actually that the results have tended to stand up, so I feel reasonably confident in these, although we'll be repeating them again this year. What we found was that stress, or at least self-reported stress, doesn't seem to correlate with sickness and absence, which is something that we ask about on a reasonably frequent basis, just because we felt that would be an indicator towards turnover at the end of the year. What we do find is one question seems to make a really big difference, and it's whether or not people believe that their managers have realistic expectations. So if they feel that their job or the expectations on them are unrealistic, they seem to have much higher rates of sickness, and they seem to be much less happy at work, and therefore probably, we think, when we look into the data shortly, more likely to have high turnover. Now, if that's the case, from a school's perspective, there's quite an easy question that you can ask your staff. Do you feel that the expectations on you are realistic? And the people who are saying no are probably the ones who you need to be putting some support in. Now, if it's a mentoring system that can help with that, then you're likely to get improved retention. So it seems like a very simple finding, actually.
So essentially, if you don't ask, you won't know.
Exactly.
So
but you've got to ask the right question. Don't ask people if they're stressed, because that doesn't seem to help. But if you ask, are expectations realistic, that does seem to give you useful information.
So have you got any, you know, so if you've asked that kind of question of your teachers that have signed up, is there any information that you're getting back that's become quite illuminating?
About what would actually help them out?
Either the causes and possible solutions that other people are doing.
So one thing we don't seem to pick up on in the same way is this idea of Ofsted being a driver of a lot of the workload. I think it probably is for head teachers, but for your average classroom teacher, they are incredibly driven by wanting to do the best by the pupils. And we did this set of questions where we asked about marking and how much people were marking each week. We asked them several times in a row. And then a few weeks later, we said, if no one knew how much marking you did, parents, Ofsted, your senior managers, how much less would you do? And, you know, around half of teachers said they would carry on doing the same amount. And that was whether they were doing 10 hours of marking or 2 hours of marking. In fact, if you were only doing 2 hours, you were more likely to say you'd do less than if you were the sort of person who did 10.
It's interesting, because I've been conducting... not that Twitter is a reliable source of collecting data, but if Ofsted can use 1,500 people's voices, then I'm going to use 200,000. So I've been asking on my Twitter channels what are the reasons for teacher workload, and time again, the results categorically say school leadership. And I've started to unpick that a little bit more. You know, is it leadership habits, perceptions from external forces? And as a former school leader, It's quite soul destroying, really, that there are leaders out there that might not actually want the best for their teachers. I'm going to give a piece of paper to my panelists to have a little look at. They've not seen this before. I just want a little show of hands. Has anyone seen the latest Department for Education workload guidance that was published? Okay, anyone notice what day it was published? Tony? Not this specific day. I'll give me a month. Day before school broke up. 21st of July, 2018. So the DfE updated their guidance and published quite a few new documents. So I'm very fascinated by all this stuff. And I've had a look through all their toolkit and all their documents. And I've given my panel one of the exemplary pieces of data. And in a nutshell, it's collecting data on data. So I put this out on Twitter a couple of days ago. So I'm going to give them a little few thoughts to stew over and ask for their opinions on that document. So let's start with Rory.
I don't really know where to begin.
This is an exemplary piece of guidance shared by a school to the Department for Education and published on the DfE site as a template to use.
Okay.
So just for your eyes only, I know you can't see this, it's a blank piece of paper, four headings across the top, and it's essentially, we'll get an image tweeted out shortly, it's collecting bits of data on how much you collect data for. So Rory, what are your immediate thoughts on, if this is our guidance for the profession?
I'm not sure that I'd be sharing this with my teaching staff. That would be my first point of call. I think it's questionable. You could ask good questions of your own senior leadership team off it, but it's certainly not something I would be handing to my teachers to complete for me.
Okay. James, immediate thoughts?
I'll start with the positives. The questions are the right questions, actually, in fairness. I think one of the questions on there is, what impact does this have on pupils? That is entirely the right question to ask when we're looking at workload. In terms of marking, is what we're doing now having a positive impact on pupils? Is it having a high enough impact to justify a relatively time-intensive activity, for example? So I think that is the right sort of question. Whether or not we need to put it into a spreadsheet and create extra work in order to judge the workload, again, I'm not sure this would be the route I would go down, but perhaps some of the thinking behind it is well-intentioned.
Okay, well said. Laura, any immediate thoughts, Laura?
So I actually am going to defend the Department for Education a little bit on this one, which is probably unexpected. But during the whichever election of the last few years it was, I think it was the 2015 election, this was actually a promise. So the workload toolkit, I think, was said by a politician on a stage. And when I was in charge of Schools Week, we would spend quite a lot of time looking back at promises that people had been made, and we would be on the phone checking to find out whether they were going to implement them. And this is one of the ones that I harangued them about quite badly. And I honestly thought at some point they would work out that there was no toolkit that they could provide, but of course they didn't. They doubled down, and some poor civil servant somewhere has been told that you absolutely must create a document which will save everybody some time.
Which probably took them ages to design all these things, ironically.
Yeah, but it goes to something actually about workload more broadly, which is that, unfortunately, politicians are put in circumstances where they need to say things that make good headlines, that make good television, and that rolls all the way down the hill to the classroom, and quite often that is what then causes random amounts of workload. And I don't think we should take politics out of education, but I think sometimes we could have better moments in that rolling down the hill where someone has the guts to just say, guys, really, we don't care that you broke that promise. It wasn't one you should have ever have made. And I don't think we yet have good enough systems to do that.
Okay. And I would agree. To be fair, there are lots of good templates in the toolkit. So I'm actually going to come to one now. And I'm going to blog this out in the morning. So these are some questions from the Department for Education for school leaders to ask of their own staff. And another question I want to ask you later is, what if Ofsted want to start testing workload in schools? Is that a positive or negative thing to do? I'd like your views on that. So here's the first question from the DfE reducing workload. This is how to structure a conversation. What would you change, Rory, which you believe would have a positive impact on reducing workload whilst maintaining standards?
Okay. My an example I can give you from this year at our school is that we've totally thrown out our assessment monitoring system because it was a very labour-intensive, click the box, tick, change the colour. You were assessing on very minute strand differences across the whole curriculum. And that was, you know, it was weighing the pig constantly rather than actually seeing what was happening in your school. So we made that decision already. We've taken that out of our school so that the assessment is now streamlined. It's very clearly marking against the broad subject. It's not about the minutiae of the detail, because that means the teachers are going to be able to make informed decisions about what's happening in the classroom.
And again, when did you start this?
Literally 3 weeks ago.
Okay. Yeah, so it's too early to tell impact. So James, what would be your number one idea?
In terms of if I were in school now, what I would look at to reduce...
You know, what would you take away to have a positive impact,
you know, what, I
but
would,
also keep
if
standards?
I would, yeah, if I was still in school now, the first thing I'd go back to is look at our marking policy. And I say that as someone who, as a school leader, I look back now and wince at the kind of marking policy I oversaw and I implemented. And there's some factors behind why I did, because at the time, Ofsted were criticising schools when they were finding books that didn't have long diagnostic marking in, and they were celebrating schools when they did. So being the conscientious school leader that I hope I was, I tried to protect our school and make sure we did well in Ofsted. So we can look at the history of that. But I think we still have so many marking policies where they're hugely labour-intensive for relatively minimal impact sometimes. Now, I'm not suggesting we just scrap all marking. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying, let's really focus on how we make it as efficient as possible. So a good example for me would be, I remember looking through some books, one of our teachers' books, and there were sort of 30 maths books, and I looked through, and I would say 75% of those had exactly the same written comment and exactly the same challenge for them to do the next day. And you sort of think, this probably, you know, took that teacher maybe 1-2 minutes to write that. But when you multiply that by 20 books, you start looking at, well, this is 30-40 minutes of marking. I'm sure after book three, she knew what she needed to do tomorrow. But she felt, and, you know, to take the blame for this, I was asking her to make sure there was evidence in the book that that feedback had been given so that we could prove it to someone. And I think what I'd like to think now is I'd have the courage to say, if after book two you start realising there's a common thread, don't write it in every book. Tomorrow morning, that's the start of your next lesson. You don't need to write this down. And in fairness to Ofsted, they're now clarifying they're not expecting to see that. But for me, I would go straight back in and look at marking, I think, because I think that's such a drain on time.
So, I would say that on my travels doing teacher training last year, after 25 years of teaching, I'm still struggling to find the most effective strategy for marking. Not that a silver bullet fixes everything, but insights from what I collect, let's just say the most effective idea takes you 5 minutes. If your school then says do it once a week for 30 children all year, and you might teach 5 different subjects as a primary teacher or 5 different classes, it equates to about 4 days of non-stop marking, and no teacher works 24 hours a day. So a 5-minute strategy takes 8 days of marking if a school insists that you do this once a week. Laura, what would you change? What do you think would have a positive impact? What are your users saying on Teacher Tap?
So marking comes up a lot, and actually one of my favourite statistics on this is that I think the number is 66%. It's in that range. 66% of schools tell teachers what colour to mark work in. And we had someone who got in touch, and their school required them to do a certain type of marking in aqua-coloured pens. And just imagine the amount of time that is wasted trying to find your aqua-coloured pen. So I sort of think that's ludicrous. The other one for us is this issue around flexible working and around emails. So when we started looking into it, secondary teachers in particular spend a lot more time on emails than primary teachers. And we reckoned the estimates we were getting back was around 6 hours a week. 6 hours a week on an email is a teaching day. That's a whole extra day of work. So I think I understand that email is in place of other systems, and I understand that that might save you some time. But again, I think we make the same sorts of shortcuts that we make in our diet with our workload, and in the end, that can catch up with us. So we think that by emailing, we are doing something more quickly, but it's a bit like sort of convenience food in the end.
Yeah, and what we end up doing is teachers are either doing it on their flexible working days off, or they're at their desk trying to teach the class and delete or read an email. Rory, what's that look like in your school in terms of email workload?
So we're really clear that teachers shouldn't be looking at emails during the day. There is an expectation that key messages may be delivered through email, but there isn't an expectation that teachers are required to email copious amounts of information to their colleagues across the schools. What I find as a school leader is that if I need to say it, and it's particularly if it's a one-to-one conversation, I need to go and have that conversation. And I think that's what I'm trying to, you know, develop my assistant head teachers to do the same, because I don't wish for the conversation to happen on electronic means and then go and have the face-to-face, or even worse, in my opinion, is have the face-to-face and then follow up with an email, because I think sometimes that can send the message that, yeah, we talked about it, but now I'm really going to check that you're going to do it. And I think if I want to develop that culture of a personal, we're going to talk about it because it's important, I don't need to then email you about it as well.
So hopefully coaching culture and teachers staying in your school is a good indication that you can address that, James.
Yeah, I was just thinking about the email thing, and I sort of show my age here perhaps. Email obviously was around when I was in school. I just like to point that I'm not that old. But I remember, and when I was an NQT, and certainly for the first few years of teaching, we didn't use email at all to communicate. Now, maybe slightly different. I was primary background, so our school, I don't know, you were secondary, so it might
I
be different.
Secondary, but, and it was the same.
All right, yeah. And I kind of look back and think, we survived. We all got the messages. We all communicated. We had a weekly briefing. You know, we had pigeonholes. But you know, I wonder if this is one of those cases where technology has allowed us to do more, so we've done more. Mm-hmm. And actually, I'd almost be interested to do an experiment. Say, what about if for 6 months in a school we didn't use email? Actually, would we just find quicker and more efficient ways, or we'd just communicate the things that need to be communicated rather than CCing half the staff in because it's easy to do. Makes me sound like a really terrible Luddite in a technology event, I realise that.
I think I remember email in 1997, but maybe I was dreaming. I just want to come back to flexible working. So NHT, you know, we see, you know, if I was brave enough to step up to be a head, and I didn't quite get there, but I would have considered maybe a part-time or a job share. And there's a few grassroots networks, the names have just escaped me at the moment, but have in your NEHT kind of insights behind the scenes, what are school leaders wanting, reporting? Are people doing job shares more?
Yeah, so that is increasingly happening. You're absolutely right. The joint headship, which was kind of, you know, 5-6 years ago, it was almost unheard of.
Can you tell us the reasons behind these requests or new patterns of working?
I mean, I think partly it's a recognition that it's an enormous job, and actually some people were saying, you know, if I want to, I was speaking to two people the other day who did a joint headship, and they said basically allows us to have our kind of family life and to be a head teacher. Now, it shouldn't be like that, but that was the kind of the motivation for them. They were saying, actually, I can have a few days when I'm not in school. But I think it's partly, it reflects the kind of the scale and the enormity of the job. There's also an element of headship is an incredibly lonely business, actually, at times. And, I look back now, and actually, if I'd been able to do a job share as a head, I think I'd have quite enjoyed that, actually having somebody else alongside you, you know, particularly in your kind of first headship. It's quite a nice thing to do, I think.
So do you have any numbers in terms of your membership?
No, I don't. I couldn't give you exact numbers, but I remember kind of 3 or 4 years ago, we had an article in our magazine about this. These people are doing joint headship, and this was really strange, and wasn't this interesting and new? Now I'm hearing about it a lot more. And as you say, there's kind of networks out there, and I'm trying to think, there's a network whose name escapes me at the moment. I'm speaking to...
Might be shared headship.
Yeah, it literally probably is that. And actually encouraging people to step up and do it. And I think it's just, you know, the more people do it, the more we become...
I think an ex-colleague of mine who was an ex-teach first, Lucy Heelan, the name,
you're right.
I think it was in your paper. Shared headship. So, you know, different ways of working. So, fascinating. So I'm going to come back to this Ofsted question. If Ofsted go in and test workload, what do you see, Rory, as the benefits or the negative implications of that?
I'm not sure that it would necessarily be a true reflection of what teachers would be experiencing, because I think if you put anything through the Ofsted lens, there is always a feeling that they'll tell the story that they think they need to tell to promote the school. So there may be internal things that they're struggling with or finding difficult, but Ofsted wouldn't be the place that they would necessarily share that. So I'm not sure that going along that line would necessarily improve teacher workload in
schools.
No
positives?
I it sounds as if it's sort of a nod to the current acknowledgement that there is a problem with workload, but I'm not sure that the actual outcome of that particular piece of work would be particularly valuable. I think, you know, more of, okay, you know, the teacher tap idea, where it's a slightly more anonymous, it's not necessarily mm-hmm. school linked, those ideas where they can share confidently and confidentially is probably an interesting and more okay. valuable source of information.
And Laura, your views?
I would just focus on teacher retention. I think it's a much easier metric. And ultimately, it's one of those things that, let's say, schools put loads of effort into it. Great. Like, there's no downside to school leaders putting loads of time and effort into making sure that teachers stay within their schools. You have to be able to benchmark it against local markets, and you've got to be able to tell a story, as with any data, where if you had underperforming teachers, mm-hmm. that you weren't afraid of those teachers leaving. But ultimately, we should be trying to keep as many staff as happy as possible, because the longer they have relationships with the pupils, the better mm-hmm. those pupils learn, and the better it mm-hmm. is for everybody.
I agree, and it's certainly not a kind of sausage roll Wednesday or a dress down Friday, but the coaching idea that you're doing regularly, some of the gimmicks that I've experienced in my career to improve staff well-being, sausage rolls and yeah. for breakfast and things like that. Yeah. So Rory, you're doing the coaching idea, yeah. And you talked about teacher retention. How do you think that's impacting on your staff's well-being? We've already touched on it briefly.
So we're a teaching school as well, so we're able to draw in some resources in that regard, but it means that teachers who start with us as an NQT or as a, you know, second year with experience, there's already a pathway established for them, so they can see what courses we offer and what things that we can provide to them depending on their personal interests in subject knowledge or in terms of them as future leaders. So because they can see that 2-3-4 year journey as themselves, that helps them want to stay in the building and in the group of schools. We're also lucky that we are a close federation of three, which means that opportunities that may arise in one school can be accessed by other members from the other schools. So that sort of joined up thinking around what we can do with the assets that we've got in the building allows us to progress as a group of schools and ultimately build those relationships for a longer period of time, which is key.
Okay, thank you. So we're on our last question. Any audience got a burning question they want to ask? Now's the time, or I'm going to wrap it up. I'm going to ask for colleagues their top tips to reduce teacher workload. So James,
I'd go back to the marking.
Marking.
If I could only do one thing, I'd go back and look at our marking policy and see, can we find a way to make this impactful but not overly time consuming.
So many schools are moving to feedback now, so we are allowed to talk to our students, and that's another way of us providing that feedback. Rory.
I was probably going to go against what you're going to say, but it's our planning format has entirely changed recently. So we now have a G Suite cloud-based planning, which means that teachers can and choose to quite often collaborate across the
okay.
planning. So
fantastic.
That's a top tip for us.
No more paper, synchronise the latest version. Excellent. And Laura?
Ask whether or not people feel that the expectations on them are realistic. And then maybe just ask if there was one thing that we could do as a school that would make those expectations more realistic, what should it be?
For regular and useful content on the teaching profession, it has to be the School Leadership Podcast.
The School Leadership Podcast.
Of course, tackling excessive workload remains a high priority for NAHT, and we were very pleased to be involved in the recent Teacher Workload Advisory Group commissioned by the DfE and chaired by Professor Becky Allen. If you haven't had the opportunity to read the report and its recommendations, you can find it by heading to the Department for Education website and searching for Teacher Workload Advisory Group. That is all for this episode. And in fact, that's it for the year. Thank you so much for listening and subscribing to the podcast throughout the last 12 months. We'll be back again next year with more fascinating guests and insightful conversation from the world of education. We do hope you have a wonderful Christmas and a very happy new year. We'll see you in 2019.
Every single episode as it comes out, just click on subscribe.
NAHT is a professional association and union for school leaders. NAHT Edge is the part of our association aimed specifically at aspirational middle leaders. To discover more about the benefits of being an NAHT Edge or NAHT member, go online to nahtedge.org.uk/join or www.naht.org.uk/join. You can follow us on Twitter. Our handles are @NAHTEdge and @NAHTNews.